you surround yourself with some other good people, you're going to succeed.
On today's episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined with the former longtime head coach at John Carroll University, Coach Mike Moran. Coach Moran is a legendary figure in Ohio basketball who built a remarkable career over four decades at both the high school and collegiate levels. After beginning his coaching journey at Elder High School, he led Villa Angela St. Joseph to two state championships and nine district titles over an 11-season span. In 1992, he became head coach at John Carroll University, where he compiled a 460 to 230 overall record, capturing 10 OAC titles, making 12 NCAA tournament appearances, as well as a good run into the Final Four. Known for his signature platoon system and emphasis on team-first basketball, Moran cultivated a culture of selflessness and relentless effort. He also coached John Carroll's golf team for 32 seasons, guiding them into six NCAA appearances. His impact on generations of athletes has earned him induction into not only the John Carroll Hall of Fame, but also the Ohio Basketball Hall of Fame. In this episode, we dive more into recruiting tactics, the story of some unique tendencies from Coach Moran, and growing a program as a head coach over his span. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Mike Moran. Dr. Dish Basketball is the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches. And this month only, you can unlock up to $4,000 off on their lineup of professional shooting machines. Just mention the Rising Coaches podcast to get even more exclusive discounts. Coaches, what's going on? Welcome, everybody. Alan and Doug here. We're graced today. This is a special one for me. We have the former longtime head coach, John Carroll University, Coach Mike Moran, the absolute Cleveland legend. Coach Moran, welcome to the podcast.
Well, it's, you know what? Thank you. Believe me, you and Al, spend your morning with me. There's not many people that like doing that. So. I appreciate it.
No, we of thank course. You, Coach. Yeah, this we've been looking forward to this one, so thank you so much.
I've spent more than enough long mornings with you, so I think one more can be suffice, right? 6 a.m. practices going through. Oh, no, we're happy to be able to get you here, Coach. Just to give everybody an idea, so as I said, you were the former head coach at John Carroll for 25 years. Your name is now imprinted on the court. You obviously are a legend at JCU as well as multiple other schools, Villages, St. Joe's. I know you were at Elder High School, but you're one of 16 coaches in OAC history to win at least 200 games and top 15 in that in winning percentage in the OAC, which the OAC, I'm biased, but is one of the top basketball Division III programs. So it's to be able to do all of these accolades and be able to have the career that you have had. It says a lot about you. I can tell stories and stories, but obviously we're here to listen to you a little bit. So I want to talk about, and I know we just addressed this a second ago. You, first off, were a football player in college. You played for Xavier University for football, and you were on the team. If people look back in history and kind of Google it, there was Marshall was going to play Xavier. The plane went down, and then there was a whole situation. If Coach, I know you were on that Xavier football team that they were supposed to play. Talk about that incident. Talk about that and kind of one, just like the, I guess how your coaches utilize that in a way to be able to make the team more impactful. But then just talk about the experience.
I don't want to belittle the tragedy that occurred. This is the season after the accident where the Marshall's plane crashed and it killed everyone aboard, and that's always a sensitive story and question about that event that occurred. In fact, they made a movie after it. Mm-hmm. And it does depict what occurred in many ways. But behind the screens, there were a lot of things that have happened that were crazy. And that's what I'll mention to you. I'll give you an example. It was a strange day. We start the football game, and a lot of interest in it. Marshall hadn't won a game since the start of the season. Of course, they were playing with walk-ons, freshmen, transfers, and anyone that was willing to play, I think, or put a helmet on, could have made their team at that time. And we, Xavier, I think we won one game up to that point, which was a successful season for Xavier. We didn't win many games. We went after it pretty hard, but we were, even though we're Division One, we were a small college and that stuff. But at halftime, just to give you an example, we're winning by a touchdown, and we're all revved up and ready to go out there on the field. And all of a sudden, the mascot, if you're familiar with Marshall, it's the Thundering Herd. They have a live buffalo running around the place. When I say running around, it got loose. So at halftime, we go running out there. We're all pepped up, ready to go in that. And somebody hollers out, the buffalo's loose. We got about 80 people on the team at that time. And we're running back into the locker room and throwing bodies out of the way so we can get through the doorway and hide from the buffalo out there. And then, so you can envision, here we are, we're sitting in the locker room for about 15, 20 minutes until the band tackles the buffalo and they get under wraps there and that stuff. So things didn't look good at that point. It was strange. Looking over our shoulders and what's going to happen next to that. Which that happened, they Marshall on the last play of the game, they threw a flare pass out to one of their wide receivers. And of course, who's supposed to be covering that area of the ground? But number 44, that was me. And so they caught it, kids scoots about 40 yards, excuse me. And that's how the game ends on that last play. The movie with Matthew McConaughey was a little different ending than that, but you get the feeling. So they, in the movie, they show all the excitement of victory and all that, but they never showed what went on into Xavier's locker room. Our coach was not, it was a little rough, put it this way. And I'm being very generous when I say that to him. Just to give you an idea, our chaplain, he said, let's say a prayer, and you can visualize this. You got 80 guys down on one knee, cross, close to the ground, waiting for the chaplain to say the prayer. And all of a sudden, our head coach decides to throw him out to the crowd. I'm trying to dress this up in a manner.
Yeah.
he says, blank the prayers, blank plane. Praying, okay. I wish we were taking a plane back, and you can fill in the rest of that. That's how
oh, boy.
Was after the game.
I mean, oh man,
yeah, it was. There was some. I can go on and on about this. Our film session when we had that, it was nuts. But like I said to you two gentlemen. Someday we get out, sit down in some corner. I'll give you all the wordage and everything else about the game itself. And it's a story that has lasted for over about 40 years already. And it's cool.
That'll be worth a trip to Cleveland in itself. I haven't been up there in a long time, but that alone will be a trip to. So Dougie, we'll get that done for sure.
Oh, there will be stories. I'm sure I could tell you stories too. There will be more than not. Maybe not about those, but I could tell you a lot of stories about Coach Moran that are very good. But Coach,
it's a good thing Xavier X-rated it. But go ahead. I'm sorry,
Dougie. I was gonna say. What led you, as much as we've known each other, I've never even really asked about that or really asked about what led you from football into basketball and to start coaching in basketball?
Back when I started, and it was a rarity to be hired anywhere. I don't care if it's high school, something, even in college, where you're only coaching one sport. This wasn't an optional. Yeah. I applied for John Carroll's job, basketball, with the knowledge that I'd be asked to coach another sport, too. In high school, okay, if you have high school experience, remember Xavier, Elder High School. That was my first job. And it was football, it was basketball, and it was track. It was three sports, okay? They didn't let you go home back then. And I think for that, for coaching, those three sports and being a full-time teacher, a business teacher there at Elder, I think I got, I know my salary was like $6,700. So, yeah, that was, things were tight back then. Mom, when I married my wife, she knew she was in for the lease for the long haul with the work and that stuff. Played football and basketball in high school. I always liked the game of basketball better. It's just, it was a more of a fun sport to play in that. But it's like anything in life. You don't know what opportunity, what door of opportunities are going to open up for you as you went on. You know, how I got into basketball, door of opportunity opened there at St. Joe's after Coach Straub retired. And being a good friend of the athletic director, he gave me the inside job, and things worked out well.
It never hurts. Coach Straub was a character. So this guy was retired, would sit on the end of our bench on his walker. I'll never forget one day. There was one specific game. We're walking halftime. We're walking from the gym. We go into like our little, where we go, like our little film room with whiteboards, all that. It's not our locker room, but we were going back there to talk at halftime. And all I hear from this long hallway, some guy walks out on a stroller, starts screaming at me from Coach Moran's office, Caputo. I look and he just has all these red circles on the halftime stats. And there's just the circles and starts cussing me out. I'm sitting here. I'm a freshman. I'm like, who is this guy? Found out. We knew who he was, but he would always come around. But he loved the game. You could tell he was always involved with the game and somebody who loved it. And that's one thing that Coach Moran was great at, too, was there were coaches on his staff that were around for years. Like Coach O'Brien was on that staff. He was on your staff with VASJ and then ends up going on to you with JCU. And you've had people, and you could tell the relationships are a huge deal, especially with you guys, because you had people, heck, your son ends up taking over after the fact. So you could tell it's a very big relationship. At least for you guys.
You asked about the reason I stayed with basketball and that stuff. I'll tell you, you know what? One thing about football and knowing the game and being involved with it is that you're very dependent on other people, other coaches. To be a head football coach, you got to be a master of or a psychologist because you have so many personalities, not just on the team, obviously, but in your coaching staff. I don't know how, guys, I'm telling you, you're married to that game 100% of the time if you're a head football coach. And I'm not knocking. That was my goal, was to be a head football coach when I got out of college. But you realize, man, there's a lot of individuals involved in this corporation or this company.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there someone, Coach, that, because all of us can look at maybe one person that nudged us in the coaching, was there somebody that saw the coach in you before it was time that just said, hey, I think you could be really good at this? And we all remember who that person is. Was there somebody that in your rearview mirror that was like that for you?
I think a couple people. One was, I'm trying to think of the priest's name that was at Xavier, Father Bischoff. He was our chaplain of the team at Xavier. In fact, he's the guy that set up. He says, are you interested in coaching football? I said, yeah, I've thought about it. He says, how would you like to coach at Elder High School? And that was my interview. I said, yeah. He says, you got the job.
that might be the fastest interview in history, course, right there.
I didn't know they were going to pay me so much, though.
Right.
Exactly. You know, anyways, wow. And then the athletic director from the high school I came from, St. Joe's at the time, a guy named Bernie Guilfoyle. He was the AD, but prior to that, he was a basketball coach there. And he, after spending a few years at Elder, he called me from Cleveland and says, hey, would you have any interest in moving back to Cleveland? And it says, yeah, you can pay me a few more bucks than what I'm making here. So he boasted, I think I got $10,000, but he had to throw in a couple extras. I had the entire track team on the I was coaching basketball still and football. Yeah, those people are very influential, and they're just good people.
Yeah. No, it's always nice to reflect on those folks, because I've gotten reconnected with my old high school coach in the last few years, and he's in his early 80s now, and lives about 30 minutes away, and we've gone to lunch, and I've taken him to a couple of Butler games here in Indianapolis, and he's a Butler graduate, so it's been fun just to reconnect with him. But that's the guy for me that said, hey, I think you have a chance to be a good coach someday. You have a good mind for the game, and you just never forget who those people are. I was curious as to who that was for you, so that's pretty cool that you can just remember exactly what they tell you and how they said it and all that.
You pick up a couple of positive traits from each one of those guys that you admire. I think of the first guy I worked for in football, for instance. I always enjoyed watching film on games. Of course, back then we had the projectors, 35 millimeters and back and forth. But I enjoyed that. And this guy, it's a Sunday morning after a Saturday game, to go over to his house and watch for 6 hours was nothing. Yeah, it was nothing. That was the constant. But you develop those likes, dislikes, the strategies and so forth from those guys that are helping. It's like Coach Straub. I worked for Coach Straub when I was at St. Joe's. He was my coach, and then I worked for him before he worked for me. Half of the traits are the same. If you can't be on time, be early. I remember things that used to, his pet phrases and stuff like that, that you carry with you for all the time that you're in the game.
Speaking of phrases that we keep, there's one that I've always wanted to ask you about. Every time, if you talk with Coach Moran, an email, a phone call, whatever it is, it will always end with two words. We even printed it in our locker room. So I've always been curious, where did that start? The phrase is, keep smiling, right? And it's one of those, it's the most positive thing to think about, but every time he'll talk to you, it'll just be like, keep smiling, and then he'll end the conversation. So Coach, where did that start?
It's like anything in life, you steal it. Anybody that says they're a great technician, they stole good information. Just that guy, it's Bernie Guilfoyle, the guy I mentioned, the AD. In Cleveland, they used to, back in my day, everybody read the newspapers. Al, you probably could relate to that.
Oh, yeah.
You
know,
you get that paper in the morning, you go through it. And in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, they always cover the sports pretty heavily and that stuff. And the Cleveland Indians at that time, anytime they played, there was a little drawing in the front page of the newspaper, just a very tiny picture that was drawn. It was if they had the Cleveland Chief Wahoo, if Chief Wahoo was smiling, hey, they won last night. Or and if he was beat up, and they had a little drawing being beat up, then they lost in that. And when I was in high school, they did a little article on me, and the guy who drew it was, his name is Dick Dugan. He professional artist and that. And he said, I'm going to give you the tribes, Cleveland Indians, Chief Wahoo's smile, keep smiling and that stuff in this picture and that. And I remember he related it to me, and somehow it just grew. I couldn't forget it. That, and it was easier than saying sincerely yours or honestly yours or something. Just a little great stuff. That's nothing exciting about that. It was passed on to me. They stole it from the artist from the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
Hey, Coach, the best coaches are very proud thieves. Doug and I have no qualms about stealing things from what people share on this pod. So we are quote criminals. We are theory, concept, thought criminals. We have no shame. No, that's good stuff.
Right.
That's good stuff.
Speaking of stealing stuff, where I want to ask you about your recruiting tactics. So if there's one thing that I can say Coach Moran was phenomenal at, it was recruiting. Like, I could sit here and tell you a handful of stories that made him more unique than any other coach that I, at least that my personal experiences that I got recruited from. Al, one of them, which is, you'll be very happy to hear, the handwritten note. I have a book of handwritten notes from Coach Moran, and I remember one of them specifically. It said it was before Christmas, and it started going over what the difference from John Carroll to every other university is. And it went pin by pin, and then one of the which said, you get to be with someone like me. And I was like, this guy. And then one of the stories that I can even say too, he came to one of my games. He sat down before the game started. He probably doesn't even remember. I don't know if you remember this, but I remember we won a championship and I told him about this and he goes, oh, I don't even remember saying that. He sat down next to me. He said, look, no other coach is in this gym here for you. He pulled me. This is before a game. No other coach is here. I drove all the way out here. I want you. What do I have to do? And I just started laughing. And he goes, all right, I'll tell you this much. You come to us, you're going to win a championship. And I'm like, oh? And he goes, and then I'm going out with you. I'm retiring once you graduate. And that right there sold me. I was like, done. Like, I'm going out with a legend. Okay, of course. And the man stuck to his word. My senior year was his last year. His name's on the court after that. But going back to what I was saying, his recruiting tactics, everything that you – did you learn that from somebody or was that something you developed over time?
First of all, I just have to – you. They didn't have spell check back those days, did they?
No, you were on your own back then.
That's yeah.
Right. I always felt that it was something like just handing someone over. In a way, I still do stuff like that. We have a big family, 20 grandkids and that. And I make them something every Christmas by hand and that. Believe it or not, I'm working on a project right now, dude. But I've done this for years. People remember that. They don't, the laptops, this. Doug, I can't tell you how many kids I've worked with or coached, recruited, that relays a similar type story as you did. I did that with, remember golfer Steve Voinovich? His uncle was the governor of the state. You know, this, and I told him, I says, I'm going to recruit you. And I said, I will guarantee you one thing. No one's going to outwork me, at least with these notes and that. And he said it got to a point where he was like, he was thinking, hey, this guy's nuts. I'm sending little Valentine's cards and stuff. I have my grandkids sending them Valentine's cards. Right. My new technique I use is I have all these grandkids and they're at John Carroll and I'm trying to fix them up with these recruits. I says, hey, but they laugh. I says, I got a beautiful granddaughter, not short.
Hey, that's right.
And,
yeah.
And they laugh. And I said, hey, I'm serious. You know, I'm not leaving anything to chance, man.
Exactly.
I know what a good spouse can do to us. But I started doing that, and I still, when I talk to the other coaches, the younger coaches, and I said, it's amazing just getting something tangible, a note, a letter, and stuff like that, and opening it up. Normally, it's a bill, and you want to throw it out, It's like sometimes old school is a good school, too. So that has always worked for me. And then, you know what, the type of kids you get. See, you're asking, do I remember? You know what I remember about you, Doug? I remember going there. You know what impressed me the most about the computer family? I said, it wasn't your footwork. It wasn't that great quickness you had, all that stuff. Okay. I can still remember Mom working in a concession stand. And there was Mooney, right?
Yep.
Mooney, and there was like an obligation the parents had to help out, help them with tuition and that. And I said I could see my mom doing the same thing your mom did back when I was in high school and that stuff. And I'm thinking, that's the kind of kid I want. Okay, The family is going to be 100% behind you if he joins the team, which is another point I made. Al, you should have seen the busload of people they would bring to a Division III game in Cleveland. Of course, the warm-up was held at Pizzazz Restaurant right across the street 2 hours before the game started.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they had their fun. God.
We had a great Youngstown, I don't know if we call it a tradition or whatever, but that was something that I always remember. Said, they're coming to town this week or something like that.
They would always pick a big game. It would be a busload of about 30 to potentially 50 people on a bus, all Youngstown people, family, friends. They would all get on a bus. They'd have a couple drinks on the bus ride up. One time they hit traffic. It was bad snow. They were late. And I'm like, oh, they must not be here yet. I wonder if they're here. I remember like a couple minutes into the game, you see a swarm of people start walking in. I was like, they're here.
I think that's a big key. You got to be realistic. One thing about Division III, you got to play the hand you've been dealt. And in Division I, you lose a big guy, let's say a 6'8", 6'9", guy in that. There's a high probability you're going to be able to plug another kid in like that. Division III, you can go from a tall lineup to a small lineup in 1 year, just like in high school. High school is the same way. And I think that was an important thing for me to recognize that. It says, in high school, I learned that the hard way, because when I started at St. Joe's, this is right after Clark Kellogg played for us, and so we had studs. So our starting lineup was 7 foot. This is high school, and 6'9". Treg Lee, Eric Riley, okay, John Buford. We lost in a fight. Yeah, that. And you think you look back, but everything we did was just centered around that type of talent or this, and we didn't try to. I wasn't as wise or close to wise when I had kids of that caliber. Here's how good talent wise we were. On the bench, now I just gave you a lineup there, 7'7", and I'm not exaggerating either. These are big 7 foot on this. On the bench, who did not start on that team, a young man named Elvis Gerbach, turned out to be the quarterback
at Michigan. Yeah.
And his running mate, Desmond Howard, the Heisman Trophy.
Oh, my God.
Those were guys that didn't start.
Wow.
Huh?
Wow.
You talk about being the most spoiled coach in the whole area. And I'll tell you what, but why don't we have those athletes? Clark Kellogg. Everybody that, had a son that had basketball ability and this and that, they wanted to come into a program where he put his stamp on. And that was huge. But,
well, that's a great point, though, Coach, that young coaches can learn is that, and especially it's huge now because of at the college level, especially transfer portal and the age that we're in is learning to adapt, because the shape of your team, really it's 1 year deals now, pretty much at the college level. Obviously the days of having four starters returning or three starters returning, like those days are gone. So very much like what you said you had to do in high school, that's a great lesson for young coaches now, is learning to adapt. If you're a young head coach learning to adapt, but also if you're a young assistant, how can you help your head coach adapt? How can you be creative in your own way as an assistant to help provide ideas and say, hey, coach, what if we did this? Or you watch a lot of teams are playing big ball now. They call it double big. And then the NBA, the Timberwolves were playing big when they had Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. The Oklahoma City Thunder played big, Chet Holmgren and Hartenstein. Florida, who won the national championship, they played two big guys. the game just goes in cycles, but I think that's a great tool for young coaches is just how do you learn to adapt? If you're the one in charge or if you're an assistant, how can you help your boss adapt? And how can you be more creative to help your staff adapt? So I'm so glad you said that because that's just an essential part of coaching, no matter what level you're at, is just learning to figure it out from one year to the next.
Well, we had that huge team that I just mentioned that we got down to the finals, lost. Then it was a year or 2 years later, I forget. We went down there with the biggest kid was about 6'5". He had a freshman point guard, a sophomore off guard, and that they won the state championship, but we just adjusted to it. I think that's got us a little bit in this platooning that we started realizing. Mm-hmm. In high school, in Division III basketball, you have to – the difference in quality and talent is not that great from one young man to the next. There's a reason why, okay, this point guard is starting for an Ohio State and he's not starting. If you look at that, there's a lot of parity and in the numbers you have and the quality of athlete. Good kids, they don't enjoy that extra athleticism. They don't maybe have that extra 2 or 3 inches, okay? You got to be realistic with that stuff there. There's a reason why in that stuff, but that's how we got into this platooning system and that played everybody. And with the thought that, hey, our numbers, our best 10 players are going to be better than your best 5.
So, yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you wear people down. You're playing for that last 5 minutes of the game when people are, you're going to be more fresh.
Doug knows this. We took a lot of, we're big in the preparation and the numbers game. And we carried it to everything that we tried to do when we orchestrated or used that system was based on fatigue. And I used to get upset because, first of all, we never called a regular timeout. It was always a rolling timeout. And I never understood this too, even to this day. Like when we were shooting a foul shot, okay, why did we have to wait for the other team to get set on the foul line? Okay, we're waiting. They're talking to their coach. I always thought that if you have possession of the ball, you should be given the opportunity to take that ball at any time you want during a dead ball situation, enter it, or do whatever you want. We'd run over there and hand the official the ball so he could remember that stuff, Doug?
Yeah, go give it to him real quick. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Why should the other team that doesn't have possession get to decide when the ball is going to be triggered and stuff like that? Foul shots, how the bounce plays, and go on and on with that. Timeouts, like I said. So we tried to really change that. And the purpose of it was to be able to use 10 guys and keep them happy too.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know how I got on that topic, but.
No, it was just talking about adapting, just being the adaptability part. And that part of adapting is strength in numbers. And if you get a chance, when you watch college basketball next year, watch University of Tennessee women's team. They play exactly how you're playing. There's 5 in, 5 out. I think it's 3 minutes that she tells each group that you're going to be out there for. And then here comes the next group. They literally play the exact way you're talking about. And they got to either the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8. But we had one of their assistants on the podcast last year. And I watched them play this year. And they play that exact same style. It's the platoon system.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that really kicked us up a notch when we started using that. And the competitiveness of your practices increased so much. Okay. In fact, there were times we said, we don't know who we're going to start this game. It's going to be the blue team or the gold team. And who's going to play the most, too. We base it on possessions. The funniest thing, we'd get a group coming out when we first started, and they would say, "Coach, I'm not tired." Then my response would be, "You're not playing hard enough."
Exactly, yeah. Right.
You go sit down and think about how hard you're going to play next time.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than enough of those conversations.
And stay ready, because you're going back in real quick, because that other group's coming out. But
yeah, you guys are coaches, so you know, find that out for me one of these days. Why do we have to wait to beckon the ball from the official when we have possession? Yeah, I never understood that. Okay, let them have a timeout to set something up, like out of bounds plays. All right, if I call a timeout, that doesn't mean I have to use it. I just want to change personnel.
And to give you an idea of our platooning, so like real quick, what we did, we had, as he said, five in, five out. We played about 13 people a game. The starting five would, the second five would rotate in about 2 to 3 minutes after. But each five, the starting five and the second five, had different offensive styles in a sense of, if we go out and called one, that one was a different play for the second group. If we called two, it was a different play, three, and so on. The first group ran a 1-2, or excuse me, the first group ran a 2-2-1. The second group ran a full court 1-2-2. So we ran different presses. We ran different defensive styles because we had different people. So it was like you scout for one team, or I should say one half of the team, and then you had to try and prepare for the second half. And then by halftime, by the time they catch on by halftime, we're probably already up 10 to 15 and running everybody out of the water. So it was like, it was so nice. But the one thing I have to say is, you had to understand you were going into something that you weren't going to be playing as many minutes. And that's what really made us so good and unique, I think, was everybody was willing to sacrifice 10, 15 minutes and extra points and rebounds to be able to be a part of a good program. And that's what made us, Coach Moran made sure to make that apparent. You're coming in and you're going to sacrifice a little playing time. You could probably get 1,000 points at a different school, but you're going to limit a little more minutes. And still people got 1,000 points, but you're going to limit your minutes and you got to give for the greater good, which was really, I think, good for at least for me to learn about a program. So it definitely helped me learn a lot about coaching. I could tell you that much.
And would you agree, Coach, also it helped you recruit because your identity, your team's identity was crystal clear.
If you know what, Al, I think it's if you're successful, it's a little easier to recruit.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it.
What was that? What was the name of the one college, Division III, that was scoring 1,000 points? They would lose.
Oh, like, Grinnell.
Grinnell.
In Iowa. Yeah. Grinnell College. Yeah.
And I had a chance. Who was it? Who was their coach I talked to one time? I kept thinking, I says, it's not just the system or this, it's the W. That's the W is what you're looking for.
No doubt.
You know.
Yeah, no, because they were averaging 130 points a game or something crazy. I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. See, I think you have to have the frosting on the cake. If you don't have a few wins in there or many wins, it works against you.
No, that's true. Yeah, nobody likes dry cake. That's for sure.
Coach, I want to ask you one more question before we get to the final question. And this is really more, I'm sure your son's going to listen to this in reference to Pete Moran, who's now the head coach at JCU. But talk to us about the opportunity, you retiring, your name is on the court. Now you have a fellow person who I think you're pretty well acquainted with, your son, who is now the head coach. And he stares at that name. He talked about it, but just talk about like the opportunity for your son to take over something that you have built over the years.
Number one thing, he was deserving of it. What's the word that since he's a family member?
Yeah, they say we're like a figurehead or something. Is this just a figurehead type of deal versus actually being qualified? Like he was actually qualified.
Yeah, you're honestly penalized if you're a relative or a son of a coach, which is crazy. Larry Karras, Coach Karras from Mountain Union, the football coach, former football coach, who's probably one of the greatest college coaches ever alive. If you look at records and what he's done and all that stuff. And he had a situation where they were giving him a little hassle about bringing his son in. And he says, you know what, you hired me to bring the best guy in. That's what we did in this stuff. And Pete is, he's blessed with, he's got brothers, two very unselfish brothers that go way beyond the call of duty when it comes to coaching and being assisting him in that, that makes up that staff along with a couple other guys. But it's a family, that's for sure. But they can get away with stuff, treating each other in a different way. There's no hesitation when it comes to explanations and stuff like that. We all feel blessed. And there are my wife, their mom, and their, it works. It works in a great manner, in a nice manner and that stuff. So it doesn't surprise me the success they've had and Pete has had. They work hard at it, Doug. They do. Oh, they're personal friends of yours and that stuff. I think we laid some bricks that got us going here, and it's great to see that it's carrying on and that stuff. They got a pretty good little point guard grandson of mine that we're pretty proud of too.
Yeah, he's not bad, huh? He's not bad. He's lighting the world on fire. Division I transfer comes in. I know he got hurt this past year, but he can play. I remember watching him when I was there, when he was coming to the Moran camps. This kid was tearing. He was in sixth grade. We were bringing him up to the high school kids, and he was tearing people up. We're like, all right, he was good.
Oh, we're proud. I'll just leave it. We're proud of all of them. Very proud.
Yeah. Pete was on the pod last year, actually during the Final Four out in Phoenix last year.
In Phoenix.
And, yeah, did a fantastic job on the podcast. And yeah, it's definitely not surprised at the success. And I know you're very proud as well.
I said first year he steps in as a head coach after wins the championship, brings the team to the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament. It's not a bad first year if you ask me.
No. It's putting food on the table too. So we're blessed, that's for sure.
Yes, sir. Coach, we have one final question we always like to ask everybody. Going back to your heyday, if you can think back, your first coaching position, right? So you said Elder High School. You go back to Elder. If you could share knowing what you know now with your younger self at Elder, what advice would you give yourself as a coach?
First of all, you have to have a tremendous love for the game and just the good parts, the bad parts. That's because for every coach out there that's Division I high level and that stuff, that are being monetarily taken care of, that's not going to happen, all right? You're going to have to run a basketball camp during the summer, which I still do. There's a lot of sacrifices you got to make. So you got to make sure you have a great love for the game, okay? I would say I've been pretty lucky. You know what? I've been very fortunate because I worked for good people, okay? Guys that were devoted to the game. I think in football, this guy Kenny Help, who's a bit high school coach, he's the guy that we'd watch film for 1,000 hours together. Coach Traub, we mentioned, Coach Savoli, people that I really admire. I'm proud to say these guys are my friends. Coach Stedman, I can go on here and that stuff. They're closer than my family is to me and that. So like I said, the thing about basketball, it teaches you to use those cards you've been dealt. It really does. And if you surround yourself with some other good people, you're going to succeed. That's it. It's a great way to make up. Just like this thing today. You guys made my week here. Maybe even more than a month.
We'd be happy with just making Friday for you. If you want to give us the month, we'll take that too. But
yeah, it means a lot to reminisce and old stories. Who'd exchange that for it?
Yeah, we're the lucky ones, Coach. We're the lucky ones. That's for sure.
Everything isn't perfect, but man, I'll tell you what. Yeah. I wouldn't give it up. I'd fight to keep it, put it that way.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, before and when we close the show, I think Doug had mentioned earlier, hang out with us for a little bit. But personally, I just want to say, number one, it's great to meet you. Doug has been talking about you, you know, leading up to the weeks leading up to this pod. And it's just been a pleasure for me just to visit with you and your humility and your appreciation for the people that helped you pave the way. And now you're in that position where you've been giving back to people. And like I said, if anybody would have told us we'd get to do what we got to do in our lives, and they would have told us this, we'd have had them drug tested and say, oh, you got to be kidding me. I get to do that. And the fact that we get to do what we do, and our whole goal with Rising Coaches is let's make our game a little bit better through the podcast and through the people that we bring on. Let's make the youth leaguers better, or the NBA people better, and everybody in between. This has been a pleasure for us, Coach. So I just wanted to say thank you on my behalf.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Doug, maybe I'll send you a letter.
Hey, I still have all the other ones. You know, I have all the other ones.
I got little shakes in my hand, so, you know, I've cut down.
Coach, I'm telling you, people never forget how you make them feel. That's why what you're saying with those, just however you do it, maybe it's notes, maybe it's phone calls. We're in electronic age now, so people don't write letters the way they used to. But whatever it is, people never forget how you make them feel. Those notes
are still remember
powerful.
The day after St. Patrick's Day, I get a phone call, and I won't go over what he said to me, but it was the day after St. Patrick's Day. We'll leave it at that. And I wasn't in the best of shape and knew it. And he called me out, and I didn't even see him. I'm like, how did this guy? So, yeah, I remember a lot of the conversations, the stories, Coach. I truly can't tell you enough how appreciative I am of you. Obviously, you've been my coach for 4 years at college. We went out together, right? We got to wear the JCU one last time together, and seeing your name on the court now. You deserve it, obviously, right? And I can't wait. Next year, we're playing at JCU. I know you're at every home game, so I'm sure I'll get to see you up in the stands, and I'm sure I'll still hear your voice coming from the stands as well. So I'm looking forward to that, catching up, and especially after the game, being able to talk with you a little more. I'm more than enough appreciative of everything you've done for me.
Thank you. And tell Mom and Dad I said hi. And Dad, the Farragher family, tell them I said hi too, okay?
Yes, Ryan? Sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Everybody, before we close it off, I want to make sure to, again, give a shout out to our collab, U.S. Nike Basketball Camps and Snow Valley Basketball Camps. We're running a conference together out in California, July 22nd. Be sure to sign up on our website or social media. Hope to see you there. A bunch of like-minded coaches will be there and a lot of people. So make sure to jump on it early. And again, as always, Coach Moran, thank you. Alan and Doug here, closing out. Keep working, coaches. Keep rising. We'll talk to you all soon. Thank you.
Dr. Dish Basketball, the number one selling shooting machine in the world, provides the most innovative game-like training with on-demand workouts, multiplayer stat tracking, and instant analytics that allow coaches and players to be better every day. All you have to do is mention Rising Coaches for an exclusive discount on a Dr. Dish shooting machine for your team.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.